And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this beautiful Saturday morning. How many more days we're going to enjoy cool air? I knoweth noteth, but it feels great outside. I think by the time I got to town this morning, it was right at 70 degrees, but still, that's great. That's better than 80, isn't it? All right. Let me run something past you. You tell me what you think about this. I would like to think this is based on common sense, but maybe it's not. But I just heard the news feed, 2 minutes ago, and they were talking about how unless a vaccine for the coronavirus is developed and administered across the board, then there's really no safe way for people to come together and sing, whether that's in church services or to practice or in the form of a church choir. Let me just kind of start at the beginning right here. And I realize this may not make logical sense, but you may not have heard this before. This might be the first time that you've been posed this idea of thinking. When the male seed enters the fallopian tube and meets up with the female egg, you have a baby that's formed. That is transported to the endometrium, or inside the uterus, where the egg is implanted, and then a beautiful, beautiful baby. If you want to call it a miracle, I'm okay with that. But that's where the baby begins to grow. And as the baby grows, you have this fluid that surrounds a baby called amniotic fluid. Most people look at me with a shock on their face when I tell them that's about 97% pure urine. And they say, you mean the baby's drinking that and it's in their lungs and covering every square inch of their skin? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But when the baby's in the womb, it's completely 100% a sterile environment. There are no viruses. There is no bacteria present. Unless, you have some type of horrific accident during pregnancy where the integrity of the womb has been breached, then under those circumstances, yes, there might could be an infection, but there would also be, I just feel bad for those situations, it's horrible. But the rest of the time, as long as the baby is inside of mama's tummy, it has not been exposed to any type of bacteria. Now, I am not telling you that I completely understand how that works, but I do this. I stand in awe of it. It's got to be the most incredible design. And I thought to myself, how could that be where there's no bacteria inside the womb? But that's God's great design. He's the chief engineer. I just kind of stand in awe of how it all works. So basically, the baby has an immune system. Some of the immune system is going to come through the umbilical cord, and you get immune cells from mama, and you get antibodies. And so I find that very intriguing and interesting. But as long as the baby's in the womb, it's in a very sterile environment. You kind of think like the boy in the plastic bubble type deal. If he wasn't in a completely sterile environment, well, what would happen to the child if he was out around normal human beings? Well, he would come down with some type of infection that his body had no ability to defend itself against, and he would succumb and die, from upper respiratory tract or pneumonia, something from that, along those lines. The baby's very, very first contact with the outside world is when it's born. And so if you look at the female reproductive tract, or the reproductive area, maybe that's the gentlest way to say it, it's completely covered with zillions, I'm kind of making that number up, how about I would say trillions, of good, supposed to be good beneficial bacteria. So the moment the baby comes from the womb through the birth canal, all these beneficial bacteria, they jump onto the baby and they cling to it like Velcro. And it's at that exact point that the child's immune system activates, because it says, oh my goodness, what are these bacteria doing on the skin? And they pick it up in 1 nanosecond. Now that's an incredible sensing device, is it not? It's just incredible. So what I'm saying is, the basis for a newborn baby's immune system to start to work and to do its job and protect the child from foreign viruses and bacteria is going to be contact with mother's vaginal flora. Does that make sense? Okay, let's speed this whole thing up right here. The recommendation to take a hand sanitizing gel that's full of alcohol and wipe your hands down with it, all you're really doing is you're stripping off, killing, harming, destroying the good beneficial bacteria that normally, if they reside on your hands and they take up residence in every little fold and line and between your fingers and under your fingernails and the folds of your elbow, then what they're doing is they're actually doing a good job for you. They're helping maintain the functional integrity of your immune system. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that I've lost it this morning, that I'm off my rocker. But I'm just trying to suggest to you there is a different narrative here. You're supposed to actually have good colonies of beneficial microbes that, if there's enough of them, guess what they do? They crowd out the toxic germs, just like in your gut. If you take massive rounds of antibiotics and you all of a sudden have this white cottage cheese stuff forming in your mouth and oozing out of your body, you might say, hey, I think I have thrush. Did I really call it fresh? It's called thrush, T-H-R-U-S-H. Because if you destroy the beneficial microbes, guess what happens? Oh, the mean, evil, toxic germs, they move in and set up shop because the conditions are right. And so we run around thinking if we could just put on enough hand sanitizer all over our bodies, we could just bathe in the stuff. All of a sudden, that's going to make us immune to the coronavirus. You know what I say to that? Baloney. It ain't going to happen. And I would say that the people that are recommending all the use of hand sanitizer, I think their heart's probably in the right place. I'm not judging them. Hey, I'm not casting stones today. But I'm telling you how this works. If you wake up in the morning and you think, before I go to the bathroom or drink water to detoxify my body with, maybe I can just smear on some hand sanitizer with a whole bunch of alcohol in it. Well, I don't think it's going to play out real well. I think all you're doing is you're weakening the ability of your immune system to give you great, robust integrity. I don't know. I don't watch the news. I don't really watch TV where I can tell you what's going on in the world. But I can tell you this. It may be beneficial to you if your immune system can actually respond robustly when a situation comes up, instead of being in a weakened state where it can't really rise to the occasion and do its job. And so let me give you a different take on this. All right, this is just one topic. Instead of using hand sanitizer that's full of alcohol and chemicals that strip off the good beneficial bacteria that actually protect the integrity of your immune system, why don't you try just using soap and water? Okay, is that radical? Just regular plain Jane soap and water. I think about a month ago I bought some soap at the store, and I had high expectations for it. But it smells so repulsive, I just can't handle it. I had to go back to my trusted one that they were out of at the time. It has kind of a lemon essence or a lemon scent. You know, that's just the way that I'm wired. I like the smell and the taste of lemons. They're great. Anyway, I know that's ridiculous. What does the smell of soap have to do with anything? Well, I don't know, but when I walk by the mimosa trees, I feel good. Have you smelled those? They are divine. If I could capture the essence of mimosa and smell it every day, I would do it. But you know what my plan is? I'm just going to walk by the mimosa tree every day because every time it grabs my attention. Okay, so that's one narrative right there. Now, point number two. Now, this is going to be, you're going to have to buy into a whole different type of a sales pitch. But just keep an open mind to what I have to say. All right. Your body has very precise systems that are designed to keep your body clean. They help you detoxify. For example, the kidneys, oh my goodness, they're like the most sophisticated yet elegant filtration systems. They are just so incredibly complicated. But do they do a good job of removing impurities from the blood so your blood stays clean? Oh my word, yes. They're fabulous. And so you know that the human body is probably 70% pure water, almost like the surface of the earth is covered by 70% water. So it doesn't matter which cell we look at your body, whether it's a brain cell or a muscle cell or a liver or a kidney cell, they're supposed to be composed of 70% water. Well, how do you get water in your body? Is it by drinking Diet Coke? No offense to anybody that drinks Diet Coke. Is it by drinking Diet Dr. Pepper? Probably not. I know that's a radical thought, that diet soft drinks don't really get you hydrated the way that your body needs to be well hydrated. I know that's a novel idea. Just let that roll around your brain and consider it for a moment. But it's drinking water. Now, I would give you this. If you want to take a bag of an herbal tea and put that in a hot cup of water and make some herbal tea, to me, that counts. That's the same as drinking water. Or if you took a quart container of water and you put a pinch of, you know, Celtic salt or pink Himalayan salt or Redmond salt in it, to me, that counts as water. I think it's good to add electrolytes and mineral substrate to your drinking water. And if you said, you know what, I want something to kind of spice up the flavor of the water, I want to put some cucumbers and make an infusion. Deal. That's water. What if you're radical and take a lemon and cut it in half and squeeze the juicy contents of the lemon or the lime into the water? That would count too. I don't even care if you take three scoops of organic Concord grape juice concentrate that's frozen and add it to the water to make kind of like a weak Gatorade for yourself. Fine, that's all good. But that is how you do it. Another person might say, well, what if I just run some vegetables and fruit through a juicer and do that? Well, that would count too. Another person would say, what if I eat more cucumbers, watermelon, cantaloupe? Well, that's water also. But you're not going to hydrate your body with either coffee or regular black tea, especially loaded with sugar, or any type of bottled beverage that they might say is to hydrate the body. That's, I just don't. Anyway, we won't be negative here. And so in order for your kidneys to do their job at detoxification and keeping your blood clean, you've got to give them some water to help dilute the toxins and to wash it out. If I asked a person, tell me about your urine first thing in the morning, they'd say, oh, it's like dark, it smells bad, it's yellow, it's real concentrated, I don't like the smell of it. I'm thinking, well, could we try giving you some water? Because I'd like your urine to be a little bit more clear first thing in the morning, suggesting that you're well hydrated. You've got to remember, folks, your body does everything it can to work properly, but it requires water to make that happen. And so every good, positive chemical reaction that can take place, it only takes place in the presence of water. If you took the water out of the body, you'd be like a piece of beef jerky, or worse, which would not be good. I would imagine your temperature would not be 98.6 degrees if you were dehydrated. It's just not. Anyway, enough of that topic. I only said that to say this right here. Whether you say, Dr. Morgan, do the bowels have anything to do with keeping the body clean? Oh my goodness, yes. That's all the waste that your body can't process or use. It's got to come out of you. That's why constipation's so bad. But what about if a person has like a fatty liver or cirrhosis, or they have severe damage to their liver? Well, that's not good either, because you cannot remove and discharge waste with a faulty, dysfunctional, sluggish liver. That's why we want to get all the fat out of it. Or if your kidneys are testing weak or in some stage of kidney failure, we may want to come up with a plan to reverse that. Yes, that is reversible under the right circumstances. Don't let anyone tell you that's impossible. If I had a nickel for every time I heard it's impossible to heal the kidneys, I'd have a barrel full of nickels right now, probably. Anyway, here's the point I'm getting to. I know I took a long road to get here, but your lungs are one of the most incredible organ systems in your body that helps detoxify and keep you clean. Are you with me on that? And so if I compared the amount of toxins that either the lung processes, lungs is what I meant to say, or the liver, the kidneys, or the bowels, well, guess which one processes the most toxic waste? If I give you a choice of four choices, is it the lungs, the kidneys, the liver, the large intestine? Which one of those does the most waste? Well, it's answer number one, or A, it's the lungs. Now, I'll say this, most of the waste is going to be in the form of gaseous waste and also the particulate or the gunk that you inhale through your nose. Somebody steps on the accelerator of a diesel pickup and they've actually removed the filter, you know, the filtration device to keep it cleaner. Well, guess what comes out the back end of the diesel truck? A boatload of black, tarry smoke. You've seen that. You're driving in public and somebody floors a diesel pickup and the black comes out. Well, that's what Charles told me. Charles, the diesel expert, he said the only reason it does that is because they've taken the filter off of it. That's why the black smoke comes out. Anyway, I trust Charles. Anyway, your lungs are your number one organ of detoxification. So, you can say this is my opinion, and I'm okay with that. But I've already kind of explained the basis for good, healthy immune function is if you have the right amount of good, beneficial bacteria covering every square inch of your skin. Are you with me on that? I'm not even saying you have to buy into that. I just want you to consider that. And so these bacteria, there are very unique bacteria that if you have enough good ones around your nose, in your nostrils, the tip of your nose, all around your mouth and your lips, inside your lips and your mouth, all over your cheeks, it's just very fascinating, this topic. So the question is, what happens when you can actually breathe with your mouth closed? I know that's a novel concept because I see people at the store all the time pushing buggies around and their mouth is wide open. That ain't right. That ain't good. You're supposed to breathe through your nose. Unless you're talking. That's different. So when you breathe through your nose, you have this tremendous protection that's God designed and God ordained. He's the master creator and engineer on this stuff. You've got all these good beneficial microbes around your nose. Unless you do one thing. I can think of one technique right now where you could create the most toxic, gaseous waste that's full of an exponential amount of filth that's just literally poisonous. And if you do this, you're asking for such severe toxic filth to build up around your face that you're causing all those good beneficial bacteria to die and you're causing the toxic ones that cause disease to grow. But before I say it, let me say this right here. I went to the hospital one time, not because of me, but because of another situation, to visit. And I came out with a staph infection. I'm not making this up. All I did was sit on their couch in one of the rooms where a patient was, and I came out with little bitty boils all over my body. Now, I took care of that very, very quickly, and my immune system had a robust response, but I don't think I have to explain to anyone listening that if you want to get sick, meaning if you want to be exposed to the most vile, evil forms of bacteria, guess where one might go to come in contact with those? It'd be called the nursing home or the rehab hospital or the hospital, because that's where that stuff thrives and breeds like toxic sludge in a septic tank or a sewage treatment plant. You know what I'm going with that. And so I learned a lesson from that. I thought, hey, if you do not want to be overwhelmed with huge amounts of toxic germs, then don't go to where they breed like there's no tomorrow. Anyway, my point is, your lungs have got to be able to expel this toxic gaseous waste. Your lungs detoxify more so than any other organ. And the way that you allow them to detoxify is by breathing in and out through your nose. Now, if you want to create a situation where your immune system becomes weaker and more burdened, then I think maybe wearing a mask all day long is going to be one of the best ways to do that. I don't know. Am I wrong by what I'm fixing to say here? I mean, I kind of thought that I had read over and over again that if there was pestilence in the land, I'm going back to Old Testament days here, if there was pestilence, if there was a plague, if there was an illness, a sickness, if there was a drought, if there was no food or no rain, if there's a severe blight or problem, if there was black mold, what do you do? If there was a skin disease called leprosy, what do you do? You run to the church. Well, actually, to the high priest in the temple. But you get the gist of what I'm saying. What are we being told today? We're being told, run away from church. I just don't understand that. You know, folks, you got to use some common sense here. I know this is a hard, hard situation that we're in right now. But if you're sick and you've got an upper respiratory tract infection or a sinus infection, you need to stay home. You need to consider others' health and well-being above your own. So if you've got a cough, if you've got green stuff coming out of your nose, maybe you shouldn't be standing in front of Walmart greeting other people with a holy kiss. I'm just joking about that. I know you don't do that. But, you know, I've observed people, and they could be hacking and coughing and say, well, they don't say. I mean, you've heard the phrase, actions speak louder than words. If you're sick, you don't have any business being in public. All you got to do is just get well, and then you can return to society. But that's kind of the way I feel about church services. If we're going to have to wear a mask 24/7, then just wait till the next wave comes on, baby, because we're going to have a whole bunch of people sick. You know, there's a lot more to this than what meets the eye, and I think that we've lost our common sense on this deal. If you want to bathe in hand sanitizer, that's your choice. You can do that. But it's only going to make you more vulnerable to getting sick down the road. Just wait. You'll find out soon enough. I hate that, but we have an opportunity here. What if you actually started doing things to actually improve the strength of your body? You know, years ago I was reading an article, and they said one of the simplest ways to predict who was going to have an upper respiratory tract infection, which, you know, that's one of the leading causes of death, because an upper respiratory tract infection, that could lead to most horrific double pneumonia. You do not live long when your lungs are filled up with fluid and water. Got it? I think we all know that. Because when you have fluid and mucus build up, that means it's ripe for toxic germs and bacteria to set up shop and grow and colonize the body. Anyway, you want to have a good, strong immune system? You need to have some skin-on-skin contact with a human being. I think it's fine to shake hands and to hug. I don't know about the kissing with a holy kiss deal. I'm sure Peter would understand if he knew that there was a potential to get sick. But when you look at the studies, if you do not put your finger in your eye or in your nose or in your mouth and then lick it and stick it in your ears and rub it all over your face after touching somebody, you're probably going to be fine. Should you wash your hands with just plain soap and water? Yeah, absolutely. But if you want to wear a mask, you wear them all day long, sleep in them for all I know. I don't think that's a good call on your part. I think you're asking to weaken your body. You're causing toxic germs to grow. I mean, how often would you change a baby's diaper? I know this sounds ridiculous, but when a baby goes to the bathroom, that urine is completely sterile. But not if it sits there and becomes stagnant, because when things become stagnant, that's when toxic germs begin to grow and thrive and reproduce and breed. That's when they start mating. Not a pleasant thought, probably. If you wear a mask on your face for hours on end every day, all you're doing is you're breeding toxic bacteria and you're breathing all their metabolic waste. That's just the way this works. You drink water and you eat a mango, and guess what? Bam, you're going to produce some metabolic waste. But you've got your lungs and your kidneys and your liver and your bowels. That's the system that you can relieve the waste from your body. Now, if your version of relieving waste from your body is recycling it over and over again by breathing it because there's a mask in your face, well, that's your call. Anyway, that's my take on it. I think I beat the topic to death this morning. I probably offended one or two people. That wasn't my intent. I'm just giving you a different perspective. So I'm open to any comments. But if you know that there's... Well, let me say this one last thing, okay? And this is truly my opinion. I think it's factual and correct, but it may not be according to the experts of the experts of the experts. But here it goes. When a newborn baby comes through the birth canal, the baby's exposed to mama's flora and bacteria. To me, that is the basis for proper immune function. Okay? And so that's what normal is. But if the child comes in contact with, let's say a herpes virus, the body is supposed to say, what are you doing here? You're up to no good. You have no good intentions. We don't want a cold sore. So the immune system, in a very robust and yet efficient sort of way, is supposed to recognize that there's a foreign virus, you know, in the mouth, and we need to mount the proper full frontal assault on it. But what happens in this process is your immune system, between the thymus and the spleen and the gut, your immune system is supposed to say, why don't we start producing some antibodies against this herpes virus so we can recognize it, just in case it tries to come back into the castle again. And so you have antibodies that attach to the virus. Now, let me kind of get everybody up to speed. Your body makes antibodies against staph when you come in contact with very small amounts of it. That might actually be very, very good. And so if I had gone to the hospital and it was just a very small amount of staph on that couch, then most likely my immune system would have said, oh my goodness, this is great. We can start producing antibodies against the staph. Therefore, we're going to have immunity against it because our immune system has learned how to defeat it, and we can mount another, you know, we can wage a battle against it if it tries to come in the back door. We can do it. But what if you're, and see, this is probably one of the points I'm getting to. You're going to have to come in contact with a coronavirus at some point if you're going to have immunity against it, which means your body starts generating antibodies. Are you with me on that? But what I'm voting is, you do not go lock yourself in a room with 100 people that are near death, where you're going to be overwhelmed with about 300 bazillion, zillion, jillion coronaviruses. I don't think that's a good plan. I think there would be so many viral soldiers coming at you that it would overwhelm your immune system. But if you have just reasonable contact with people, you know, out in public, you're actually giving your immune system a chance to produce antibodies if it's just a very, very small viral load. Anyway, my opinion is, at some point, your immune system is going to have contact with the coronavirus. I mean, that's what I want for myself. But I want to have a small contact with it. I don't want to have 40 zillion viruses coming at me at one time. I want it to be just, you know, a few thousand maybe. That way it's not overwhelming all my immune system's defenses or ability to generate antibodies. I don't know if you know the story. When smallpox was ravaging Europe, have you ever seen pictures of smallpox? It looks bad. I promise you, if you saw somebody with smallpox and they walked up to you with their arms wide open saying, here, give me a hug and a kiss. You would do an about face and run the other way without even being concerned about offending the person, because you're saying, there's no way. I do not want smallpox. But they noticed back in the day that there was a disease called cowpox. That's a close cousin of the smallpox virus. And the milkmaids, they were the ones that would, you know, put the stool back by the Jersey or the Guernsey or the whatever cow was producing the milk. You know how cows do after they have babies, they make milk. You're milking the cow, you come in contact with the cow, and all of a sudden you get these skin scabby lesions on your arms that are called cowpox. But they didn't hurt the person. They didn't kill them. But that's called an immune response. But lo and behold, the milkmaids never got smallpox. I want to know who the genius was that made that astute observation, because that was brilliant. And so making the observation that the milkmaids didn't get cowpox, somebody came up with a genius idea. Like, oh my goodness, I got an idea here. I'm going to take a stick or a needle, and I'm going to poke it in all that gooey fluid out of the lesion or the scab or the sore on the milkmaid, and I'm going to introduce that to the person that's got smallpox by jabbing it in their gooey wounds. Well, guess what happened? It produced instant immunity. All they did was they transferred antibodies from the milkmaids that were immune to the smallpox into people that had smallpox. Bam! And that's where the word vaccine comes from. Isn't that where... What's a vaquero? It's a cowboy. But vaca is a Latin word for cow. And so that's where we get the word vaccine from. Anyway, if you would like to join me on the air, if you have a question or comment, especially as it relates to how to improve the body naturally without some type of toxic substance. There's no lack of this, folks. Okay. I think officially the phone line's open. If you want to call, 903-586-5257. This program's Health Essentials. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Oh, that was very interesting. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. I was talking with my grandson this last week, and he told me that he gets nosebleeds for no particular reason, and they can bleed for quite a while. He's gone to the doctor. They couldn't find anything to do about it, so I thought when Saturday rolled around, I'd see if I could find something for him.
Well, let me tell you how to make your nose start bleeding, okay? what I want you to do is I want you to avoid anything that has vitamin C and zinc in it.
Okay.
And if we just totally suck all that out of you, it's just a matter of time until you have a nosebleed. And the other way that we can do it, I want to load you up on Twinkies, Ding Dongs, Ho-Hos, Suzy Q's, chocolate covered sugar bombs, raspberry cocoa puff, atomic warheads. I just
so
made that last one.
Sugar may not be the right diet?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm suggesting. Yeah, I'm just sort of teasing.
I want you to clarify because it's a little foggy for me.
well, what happens is if you exceed your body's ability to handle sugar, like you give it more than what it can process, you're asking for it. Now, I'm sort of joking as I say this because I was raised in a different time and there's some things that I think are funny, but there's an old skit with the Carol Burnett Show. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I sure do.
And I can't remember if it's called Mama's Family or Mama's House, but you know the crotchety, very cranky mother. I can't remember if it's Lois or Eunice. It's one or the other. But Carol Burnett plays this role. And in this one skit, there's Betty White. You know who Betty White is?
I do.
Well, supposedly, Eunice and Betty White were sisters, and they do not get along together. And they're going back and forth, just zinging each other. And I'm watching this, and yes, I probably find it very comical. But so, Mama has a birthday, and Carol Burnett makes a cake for her. And Betty White says, no, I think I'll pass on that high sugar, you know, cake, you know, because I don't want to deplete all my B vitamins, because if I did, I might go crazy or have schizophrenia or paranoia, and so everybody's rolling their eyes, and Betty White's just like zinging her, like, you'd be nuts to eat all that sugar. And anyway, the point I'm getting to, sugar contains empty calories, which means you put it in the human body, and guess what happens? It will suck you dry of nutrients because there's no nutrients in sugar. If you want the nose to start bleeding, just eat a bunch of sugar and eat a very low-density nutritional diet, which means stay away from ocean fish and stay away from chicken. Anyway, my point is, if you don't eat vegetables and fruit and you eat a bunch of sugar in the place of it and you're low in vitamin C and zinc, you're going to have nosebleeds.
Gotcha. Very good. Well, now I know what to text him or call him.
How old is he?
Thank you. 19.
Okay. Well, let me know what happens.
Speaking of letting you know what happens, I called you about 3 weeks ago about the my hand and just where my thumb of the bone is starting to stick out, really hurt. And you asked me if I ate nuts. And of course, you took away my junk food, which is nuts. And but anyway, getting off that and off most wheat,
yeah,
I found the pain almost immediately reduced.
That's what a bizarre side effect of giving up nuts and wheat. You mean you're really being straight with me? The pain magically started to go away.
It yeah it did. And the
thanks for the feedback.
The bone protrudes out still, but not to the extent it did before.
Well, that's impressive because usually all that buildup is a big honking calcium deposit.
Aha. Does anything dissolve that? Is there something that put in there?
You know what? Years ago, I had a guy walk up to me. He says, "I'm in real serious trouble." I said, "What's your problem?" He said, "I can't go fishing." I said, "And pray tell, why not, young man?" He says, "Because my joints and my knuckles are so stiff and so painful, I can't even hold a fishing pole, and it's really breaking my heart." And I thought to him, this is serious. I mean, this is really life or death serious. Can't go fishing. So I put the full weight of my energy into that situation all of a sudden because I thought, what if this were me? I would want somebody to help me with my fishing. Of course, I haven't caught anything in a while, which means I need some tutorials on some fishing skills. But anyway, I told him something in passing, and I got to admit, I just thought that I said, he's probably not going to do this. He's gonna look at me. He's going to walk away and say, that guy is a whack job. His head's not screwed on straight. Where he's come out in left field, I thought he was going to tell me about Tylenol or Mobic or some type of exotic drug that was going to help me. Of course, I don't do that. Anyway,
that's why I do listen to you.
So I told him to take a fresh lemon and just rub that lemon juice all over those knuckles, the ones that were real painful. I had no idea that he was actually going to do what I suggested because I went to church with him. I mean, you know how that works. A prophet in his own town is not respected, that sort of deal right there. And so, lo and behold, a week later, he walks up to me and he starts flashing his hands, you know, pumping them open and closed. And I'm thinking, is he saying hello to me? Is there something wrong with him? I'd already forgotten about the severe lack of fishing because of the severe arthritis. I said, hi, Jimmy. How's it going? Hello, back to you. He goes, look at this. I'm going, what are you trying to show me? You know, I had to make him say it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, my hands. He said, I can open and close them now. Well, there is a substance that acts like a solvent. If you got grease all over your hands, I do not recommend you use gasoline or diesel fuel, but that will get the grease off your hands. That's a solvent. Don't do it.
Right.
But people have done it for eons. If you've got horrible calcium deposits and horrible inflammation in your knuckles and joints, why don't we rub some lemon juice on them or some olive oil? Both of them. But you want to let the lemon juice air dry. Let that stuff soak in. One of the reasons why you should not wash your hands in gasoline or acetone or diesel fuel or jet fuel is because your body will soak in, and it's toxic stuff.
Yeah.
Not good for the central nervous system. If you don't want to develop dementia and Alzheimer's, do not wash grease off.
Hmm.
And that's why I don't like hand sanitizer. It's just like a lesser version of jet fuel.
So are you saying olive oil also has a solvent? in it?
Well, it works on a different principle, but I tell you, if you said, if you challenge me and say, I'm going to demand that you only tell me two things that I can do for my hands, I would say, yes, besides what I've already told you, we'll rub some lemon juice on it, let it air dry, and let the solvent help dissolve some of the debris or the particulate that's building up in those joints to kind of make them more functional. It doesn't matter how I slice or dice this topic. You're still going to have to restore your hands where they can open and close really, really well if you're going to break down those calcium deposits.
You know, I did it a different way before I knew about this. I had a index finger, and I had a knuckle that I could barely close, and there was a big something under the skin just pushing the skin out. So I went to the doctor, and he did a little in-office surgery. And I said, well, what was in there? He said, oh, just something. I popped it right out. I said, there it was, and out it came. And he really wasn't very specific about it. So now I know what was in there.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
And now I know a better way, another way.
But if you
better.
Yeah, well, it's something that you can try. And, you know, what I'm telling you is 100% safe. No one's ever died from, you know, rubbing olive oil on their hands. Well, I take that back. If you're attacked by a pack of hyenas today and you cannot grab, you know, your 9mm to protect yourself because it slips out of your hands because of the olive oil, okay, under those circumstances, I totally messed you up. But besides that, if you will let your skin and your joints drink up the olive oil, I'm telling you, olive oil is so nutritious for the joints and the muscles and the skin. Let your skin drink it up.
Well, it's not a 9mm, it's a 38, but I'll keep a rag around just in case so I can wipe it off really quick when you see that fat hyenas out there.
You know what? That's a good idea. Because what if you drop it? I don't want your fingerprints all over that 38. I'm joking.
I guess a joke. Olive oil may not allow them to be printed.
You know, I think that's what General George Custer did at his last stand. he was giving himself a beauty treatment, and then when the attack came, his Sharps rifle shot out of his hand instead of firing. The olive oil, it just slipped right out from under him.
Got it.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you for your phone call. I appreciate you. Yeah. I wish you very best, and I wish best to your 19-year-old grandson with nosebleeds. Let's get those corrected.
Yes. Thank you.
Good deal. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
There's a phone line once again open. This program is Health Essentials. I'm Dr. Morgan. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. You know, there's several things that make me very, very curious. When someone says, I have an impossible condition to heal, my doctor says he has no confidence I'll ever get better. All I can do is drugs. I always think, that cannot be true, and let me prove that it's not true. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Thank you for calling.
I cannot believe I'm finally getting through.
You made it.
I made it. I actually made it.
You get the A-plus today. 5 golden stars. Yay.
Oh, well, it's the Lord.
Yes, thank you. We can thank him literally for our breath right now, right?
Oh, Dr. Morgan.
You are a good girl.
A year ago, on Father's Day, I was diagnosed at the hospital with a flutter.
AFib or a flutter?
A flutter.
Okay.
And I've never had anything like that before through the process of testing and all and sleep labs. I was diagnosed with severe sleep apnea. I've been on the APAP for a year faithfully every night. And the pulmonologist who's seeing me is not at all happy with my kidney function because I continue to get up 4 to 5 times a night. And number one, we don't take any drugs.
Do you have a swollen prostate?
Do what?
Do you have a swollen prostate?
I'm a female.
Oh, well, we'll scratch that one off the list then.
Let's do.
That was horrible, I know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, Wayne once did, but he no longer does. But nonetheless, I have tried everything from fasting from 2 o'clock. Oh, we've completely rid ourselves of grains and sugar, and you know, for a year now I've just been diligent at working towards this end of being having healthy kidneys. And I have 2 cups of coffee every morning with whipping cream, and then I just have water the rest of the day. I've watched the pulmonologist suggested I don't drink water all day, but just if I'm severely thirsty, but to have water with my breakfast, you know, water with my meals, in other words.
I just don't even like this plan that you're giving.
Okay.
I'm not trying to show my disapproval, but the idea I don't have water all day long, that's just nuts.
Okay. Well, I've always had my Yeti with ice water. I'm a weaver, and so I take it with me to my loom, and it's not that I'm drinking constantly, but, you know, I'll register thirst, and I'll drink a couple of sips. I had read an article about a kidney specialist who was in our armed forces, and he was adamant about blending a can of asparagus and having 3 tablespoons every day, that would help cure the kidneys.
Well, so asparagus does act like a very good diuretic, but that would increase urine production.
Uh-huh.
So did that work?
Maybe to where I wasn't getting it 5 times a night, but between 3 and 4 times a night.
Can I tell you what my number one concern is right now?
Please.
And I realize I'm only giving you small snippets and I'm going off on one tangent, but let me have a run at this right here.
Please do.
At the very base of your skull, you know, you can't see it because it's embedded in your spinal column, you have what's called the brainstem. And from
right.
The brainstem, that's where you have the arising of what's called your autonomic nervous system.
Okay, can we put a comma there?
Of course.
I had polio at age 15, and they said that we had German physicians who cared for us. My brother and I were the last 2 reported cases in Galveston County because the salt vaccine was brought out the very next week that we were diagnosed. And they said that the polio virus first attacks the brainstem.
Yeah.
And that the rest of my life to be aware that my nervous system and my immune system was cut in half.
Well, and you know, I wasn't trying to be rude talking about your brainstem or like
no,
the topic.
I didn't know that,
so I wasn't trying to just jump out the starting gate and say yours is weak, but that's what your body's telling me. And so the reason why I'm saying that, when you lay down at bed to go to sleep at night, you need your autonomic nervous system to fire on all 8 cylinders, which means your breathing is perfect. You're not short of oxygen. And basically, everything that's happening is you're creating so much acid waste that your kidneys have no choice. They're not able to sleep at night. They're forming urine all night long. What's supposed to happen is when you lay down at 10 o'clock at night and you fall asleep within 5 to 10 minutes, your kidneys are supposed to get in the bunk and go nutty-night and not even work all night long. That's what's supposed to happen. But that's not what yours are doing. Yours are fired up saying, oh my goodness, we got all this acidic waste. What are we going to do to get this woman in good working order? So let me suggest a couple things. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But if I'm right, we'll take it
right.
And run. We'll take it and run with it, okay?
You bet.
All right, number one. Here's what you want. You want your nervous system being so grounded and settled that not much that goes on around you really upsets you. I want you to feel like you're very calm and that you're centered and nothing really rattles you. Is that the way it is right now?
Pretty much.
Okay, good. Then I would say if you were in front of me, the first thing that I would do is I would probably try to test the functioning of what's called your vagus nerve. And one of the reasons I'm saying that is what you led with.
Mm-hmm.
Your vagus nerve is the only nerve supply. It comes from the brainstem up through the brain, down through those 2 openings, but it's the vagus nerve. It's the only nerve supply to your heart. And so if the vagus nerve does not fire on all eight cylinders like it's supposed to, what you have is AFib or aflutter or other issues. For example, I think I told somebody last week on the radio, the vast majority of all heart problems, as in all of them, are when the resting pulse rate is 78 beats a minute or higher. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
And so what we're doing is, if you have an atrial flutter or an aflutter, then there may be some failure of the vagus nerve to work properly. And what I'm thinking of is, what can we do to retrain the vagus nerve to work properly? And here's what I would say. If you are willing to go for about a 45-minute walk every morning when you arise, that would be one of the ways of training the vagus nerve to start working better. You're giving it a reason to become more efficient. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. I sure have trouble walking now. I'm 80, and I have some muscle issues from polio.
I agree with you. You're going to have a much tougher row to hoe than the average person does because of the issues.
Would a stationary bike?
Well, that would be something, but unless you can get your foot on the ground, I know it's difficult, but you have. So here's the simplest test that I can think of.
Okay.
And I just read this the other day, but they've shown in recent studies. When I say they, I'm just referring to ambiguous researchers, since I can't remember the name of the researcher or the university. But they said, okay, here's the easiest way to test the central nervous system and the functioning of the body. And I said, okay, I can't wait to hear this. And they said, if you could just put your bare feet on the ground and you could just squat all the way down to the ground and you could hold that for 10 minutes and keep your balance while you're on your feet, that's going to be a central nervous system and a vagus nerve that's working really, really well.
Well, that would be lovely.
Well, but if you can't do it, at least you could start to practice it. But you'd have to, it's full flexion of the hips and the knees. You're just squatting on the ground like you're taking a stick and you're poking the fire while you're in Cambodia or Vietnam or someplace like that where people do that all day long. And so what we're doing is we're trying to retrain your nervous system to work properly. I know that walking is going to be hard for you, but what do you do when something doesn't work right and the muscle doesn't cooperate? You make it do what you want it to do.
Okay.
Your force of will in your mind has got to tell your body, you will do this. You've got absolutely zero chance of improvement if you cannot make your body comply with your wishes and do what you ask it to do.
I understand. I'm all set to give this a mighty go.
Gargling has been shown to help. If you want to take and just gargle water for 30 seconds three times a day, that's been shown to give tone to the vagus nerve. What were you going to say?
I said, oh, wow.
Well, that's a free technique. Humming has been shown to help. So if I ask you, do you know how to hum, what do you say?
I do it all the time.
Good.
I'm always singing.
I want you to say, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You betcha.
When somebody cooks a cinnamon roll for you for breakfast, what do you say?
Sadly, I don't. Because
I'm joking.
Because we have great numbers, but I sure would drool.
If somebody said you get to be at your weaver's loom all day long, what do you say? Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? The weaver's loom is going to be a good thing and a bad thing altogether, because, you know, the hardest thing on your body and your kidneys right now is sitting down. There's no way the kidneys can be restored by sitting down all day long. And one of the reasons why is you just don't get enough passes of blood. If I told you about the studies of people that have had a stroke and they're laying in a nursing home bed all day long and they're sedentary, they have done ultrasound tests and they know that they only filter about 200 gallons of blood a day. And you're thinking, well, that's great. No, it's not. An average person that can move around and do, you know, walking, they're getting about 2,000 gallons of blood a day that's passing through every square inch of their arteries and veins.
Oh, mercy.
Unless you get blood moving, there's no way to correct a flutter. Unless you get your blood, because the slower that blood moves through the body, the dirtier it is. You don't get the rich oxygen and nutrients, and so your blood is like an ocean of delicious nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And unless it moves with enough passes, you can't heal or fix anything. And so that's why I said 45 minutes of walking every day. So in your case, maybe it'll be just 40 minutes of walking with 40 minutes of exercise bicycle. I'll make a deal with you. I'll knock off 5 minutes off the walking. The reason why I said walking is you're forced literally to putting one foot in front of the other.
Okay. And to start out, I would just not worry about how fast I can go. It's just accomplishing it.
That's it.
Whatever pace that I can take.
If you tell me you're as slow as molasses on a winter day coming out of a bottle, that's fine by me as long as you're moving.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to go to the grocery store with me in about 5 minutes, yeah, my program's almost over in 5 minutes, because I have to go get something. I can show you and demonstrate a little old lady and a little old man that has their mouth open, and they're taking little shuffle steps pushing the shopping cart. That means they're moving that foot every bit of 2 inches just to move that cart forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that ain't good. That means they have become so feeble. It is hard to turn all this around when you become more feeble, and I'm afraid that it's just too easy to sit behind the loom all day long instead of making yourself do the very thing that's painful, which is making that foot and hip and leg put it in front of the other, called walking.
And to breathe with my mouth closed, right?
That's the only way. You've got to start breathing through your nose if you're going to start balancing the blood gases. But we've got to improve. There's a technique called mewing, M-E-W-I-N-G. It doesn't involve a cat wanting milk. It's named after Dr. John Mew, a dentist, an expert from Great Britain. I know what you're thinking, because he's from Great Britain. He's not as smart as a doctor on the radio from East Texas, but he probably is smarter. But if you will try the technique called mewing, you've got to increase the tone of your soft palate. And you've got to be able to put your tongue securely against the roof of your mouth to open up all your airways.
Okay.
The APAP, BiPAP, CPAP, whatever the device is called, it can never do what God's creation can do, which is to deliver oxygen. We got to open everything up. We got to open up your hips. We got to get your legs stronger. You got to improve your muscle tone. We got to get that blood moving. It's not going to happen in one day, but if you stick with us for like the next 6 months, you will say, Dr. Morgan, this is weird. My A flutter is going away, and all of a sudden I'm sleeping without a CPAP, and I'm not getting up five times a night. If you just focus on easy protein to digest, like fish, or maybe a little bit of chicken, and eggs, and you avoid stuff like fried pork chops, you'd be better off.
Okay.
If you eat green vegetables,
That's the good.
That's the basis for getting those alkaline ash minerals that you need to help soothe the kidneys.
We try to have a salad with every color in the rainbow, including blueberries, once a day.
I hear the rainbow symbol is pretty popular these days. That sounds like a winner.
Well, in our perspective, yes.
The hardest thing is going to be sugar and soft drinks on the kidneys. It just literally beats the stuffing out of them.
I haven't had a soft drink in I don't know how long, and we don't have sugar now. So
you've got to take command of this walking business. If you do not do this, you will fail. I've had 31 years to experiment with every person that walks in my door. You could tell me right now, and you could be honest. You could say, "I don't like that." I'd say, "Great, do it anyway."
I want to live as long as I'm supposed to live.
Well, what if you have 20 more years of great productivity where you can bless innumerable people? Good.
That's what I'm hoping.
Well, thank you for your phone call. I just ran out of time. Sorry about that.
Oh, Lord bless you.
Oh, you too. Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye.